time for the Border News Roundup with Marshall Humberger. He's the editor of the Timberjay, covering news up in northeastern Minnesota, and he joins us this morning. Morning, Marshall.
Well, good morning, John.
Listen, I was telling Jennifer, it seems like you just have action-packed stories every single week. Are you making some of this stuff up?
No, actually not. We don't have to. There's so much stuff going on around here if you actually start looking around.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's it. Yeah, you're looking around, but I'm just amazed. Every week there's something crazy or different going on. And the first one is you had 18 Somali Americans visit Tower. What's that all about?
Well, this was really a remarkable visit. I mean, I have to say, it's not like we have Somali Americans showing up in Tower on a regular basis. You know, this was new, and I was so pleased that Jody and I were invited to this gathering. They had about 18, 20 local folks basically spending a few hours and having dinner with a group of Somali Americans from the Twin Cities area. And it included Ilhan Omar, who's the state representative from the Cedar Riverside area down in Minneapolis. She's gotten a lot of attention in recent months, and she was the first Somali American woman to ever be elected to office in the U.S. I mean, she was on the cover of Time magazine here about 2-3 weeks ago, and she's been on Trevor Noah. So, I mean, she's certainly been getting around, and it was amazing because in this last week, she had been in Eastern Europe meeting with some top leaders there, and then she had flown to New York where she had met with Erdogan, the president of Turkey, and then had flown back to the cities and driven up to Tower. You know, so it was great, and it was nice because when we were having dinner, I had just sat down with a group of Somali men, and she came in and sat right next to me, so we got to talk for like an hour, which was just amazing. I mean, she's an incredible person. But what I was so impressed about was, you know, and finally I asked one of these the folks there, I said, I mean, are you guys representative of the Somali American community? Because I said, you guys are really impressive people.
Mm-hmm.
I was just amazed at, you know, how engaging they were, how thoughtful, you know, and just, I mean, they all spoke English very well, so it was really easy to converse. And they were very interested in our area. They had first come up go down in the Sudan mine. So that was a really different experience for them. And, you know, and they had lots of questions about that. They were very interested in just finding out about, you know, what does it cost to buy land up here, you know. And you could see the wheels were spinning with some of them. They wanted to know, what does it cost to buy a house? You know, they were really interested, I think, in moving out, you know, into other parts of Minnesota, you know, because for the most part, they've really been clustered, you know, kind of in the inner city down in Minneapolis, whereas traditionally, you know, their culture, they're nomadic or they're farmers, you know, so they're more used to being out in the rural areas. So I think there's some interest there. And I was trying to encourage them for sure because, you know, the one thing about the Somalis especially is they're very entrepreneurial. You know, if they come into a community, they start businesses, you know, they start generating economic activity, which, of course, is something we're always looking for in a little town like Tower. And I don't know, I was just so impressed with them. I thought it would be great to have some of them living in the community. But at the same time, you know, they talked about how they're a little bit reluctant. You know, many of them had not, you know, really traveled outside of the Twin Cities area. I think the furthest north any of them had ever been was Duluth. You know, they'd never been up in our area, and you know, in part because they're a little bit fearful, obviously traveling outside of you know, kind of the areas of the Twin Cities where you have, you know, clusters of Somalis, just because, you know, especially if they said since in the wake of the most recent election, you know, they said they're a little more nervous, you know, there've been more you know, attacks and things like that. And they're concerned about that, obviously. And that was actually part of the reason that they wanted to come north and meet with people here was, you know, they wanted to start doing some outreach so people, you know, in other parts of Minnesota you know, see that they're not scary people at all. They're really interesting and engaging people. Like I said, I was tremendously impressed by them.
So, Marshall, I know you briefly touched on that, but what was their opinion of the North? That's a big deal.
Well, you know, they didn't get a huge look at it, but they thought the mine was really great. And, you know, they had a very warm welcome from the folks who, you know, from Tower, the Tower area, who were there to meet them. So, I mean, they were very complimentary of everybody. And I should mention, too, that Representative Rob Eklund, you know, from International Falls, he's represents this area. And he was there as well, and he's actually become good friends with Ilhan, you know, because they're in the same caucus together down in the legislature. So it was fun to have Rob there as well, and he certainly got into the festivities, and it was fun. But one of the things I thought was interesting, you know, one of their concerns, and I had a couple people ask me about this, you know, about the animals. I think they're a little bit, they were definitely nervous about, you know, the wildlife here and whether it was dangerous. You know, and of course, coming from Somalia, you know, they had lions out in, you know, out in the rural areas, so and things like that that could kill you. So you could understand them being a little bit reluctant there. But, you know, I tried to assure them that our black bears are nowhere near like lions, and they're not going to be, you know, anything that's terribly dangerous. So whether that assured them, I don't know, but I did exchange cards with a couple folks, and we were going to get in touch, hopefully on maybe looking at for some land.
All right.
And tell us about the controversial forest management bill that has been backed by Representative Nolan.
Yeah, this is some federal legislation. It's called the Resilient Federal Forests Act. And it's being pushed right now by a handful of mostly Western lawmakers who say they're hoping to streamline federal regulations in order to increase timber production on national forests. The bill would really greatly expand the ability of federal foresters to sell huge tracts of timber without the standard environmental review that currently takes place. They could actually sell up to 10,000 acres of timber for without doing any kind of environmental review. They'd be able to sell this under what are called categorical exclusions, which are certain, you know, classifications of federal actions that don't require environmental review, generally because they're considered to be insignificant. But, of course, you know, most people say a timber sale of 10,000 acres, you know, there might be some consideration there that that they should be giving to that. So this is definitely a big change. I mean, this would essentially allow, I mean, there are no timber sales on either the Chippewa or the Superior National Forest that come anywhere close to 10,000 acres, and this bill probably wouldn't change that. It just means that there really wouldn't be any need to do environmental review of any significance on any of the projects in the area. And, you know, there's some folks, obviously, I talked to Wayne Branch from Minnesota Forest Industries. He said he thought this was a good step, you know, that right now the federal foresters, he said, spend too much time on, you know, paperwork and things like that, you know, doing these environmental analyses rather than laying out timber sales. And, you know, he said this would help to streamline that. On the other hand, a lot of the environmental groups are very concerned about it and say basically it sort of takes away the public's input into the management of the forest. Since, you know, a lot of the, when you do environmental review, there's always a fairly extensive public input opportunity there. And so environmentalists are concerned that they're going to be, you know, losing that opportunity as a result of this bill. There's a lot of other things that the bill does. You know, it's a pretty extensive bill. It involves, you know, federal fire funding as well, lots of other changes in policy. So it's a pretty comprehensive bill, but it doesn't have much backing from Democrats. It's almost all Republicans. The only two Democrats signed on to this bill right now are Representative Nolan and oddly enough, 7th District Congressman Colin Peterson, you know, and he doesn't have any federal forest in his district, but for whatever reason, he signed on to this bill along with Nolan.
We speaking with Marshall.
Nolan has kind of been, you know, he's been working pretty closely with the group of Western lawmakers in recent months. You know, they're kind of supporting him on his push to open up copper-nickel mining in the Superior National Forest, and he's kind of backing them, I think, on these forest initiatives.
Speaking with Marshall Helmberger, he's the editor of the Timberjay. Marshall, Frontier Communications is being investigated. What's that all about?
Well, they're actually being investigated by the Timberjay right now.
Oh!
And we put, as part of that, we put out a call for people in our area to contact us to tell us about issues they've had with Frontier Communications. And Frontier serves a pretty good chunk of our coverage area, you know, including the Tower Sedan area, Lake Vermilion, Crane Lake, Ely, you know, places like that. And we've just been, we've experienced problems for years at our own business, but we've been hearing from more and more business people about, you know, just a huge long list of issues and problems they're having, and including some that are very significant, you know, like outages of their internet capacity for days at a time, you know, so that makes it very problematic to conduct commerce, you know, if you can't run credit cards, things like that. So it's having a real effect. And then just, you know, average people just, you know, not, I mean, the stories we're hearing are pretty amazing. And the frustration with customer service and with systematic overcharging. You know, you're sold a product, you specify what the price is. And we've learned over the years when we deal with Frontier, we get everything in writing. And even when you get it in writing, often your bill comes when it finally arrives. It's not what you were told. Hmm. And it's so systematic that it's really become a concern. And so we decided we need to start doing, you know, some investigations, start documenting some of this and get it out. And hopefully it'll lead to, you know, some kind of action, hopefully by the Attorney General or somebody who will start to take a look at this long list of problems that this company is foisting upon residents of our area.
So, Marshall, are you talking like internet? Are we talking television too, or is it just?
It's pretty much internet and phone service. You know, they're the phone provider. I think some people do get television through Frontier, but mostly what we've been hearing about is internet. I think it's the biggest beef, and then just the fact that whatever kind of service you get, you always get charged more than what you're told.
So, Marshall, can anybody do an investigation? I mean, or does, you know what I mean? How does that work?
Well, I mean, anybody could. You know, it's just a question we have with the newspaper. Obviously, we have the ability to reach out to a large number of people relatively easily. You know,
and the better.
And, I mean, all our investigation would be we would simply, like we do with lots of investigations,
sure,
we ask questions, we gather information, and then report it. You know, this is really no different. It's just that we're starting out by, you know, basically telling everybody we're doing the investigation and to please contact us with your stories, because we know there's lots of people out there. I mean, we've heard, you know, from folks we know of problems, but we know there's lots of other folks out there who've had problems with Frontier, and we want to make sure that they're contacting us so we can get make a broad look at the issue.
Sounds good. Make sure you will keep us abreast of that situation.
Yeah, we will.
All right, and what is happening with the wolf population lately?
Well, the DNR actually just came out with their latest survey. They're doing an annual survey these days just to kind of track the wolf population. And their latest numbers show a fairly big uptick in the wolf population, about a 25% increase over the previous year.
Wow.
And, and really the thinking there is that you know, this just tracks the recovery of the deer population. You know, the wolf numbers kind of ebb and flow. I mean, you have that normal, pattern with prey and predator populations. As the prey population increases, you know, you're going to have more predators generally. And that seems to be what's going on here. We've had those three straight very mild winters, which have really allowed the deer population to come back. And human hunters aren't the only ones reaping the reward from that. Obviously, the wolves are doing better as well.
How's that received in the coffee shops?
Well, you know, mixed, of course. there's always folks who don't like to see the wolf numbers going up. But on at the same by the same token, you know, it does show that that deer numbers really are more dependent, I think, on our winter weather than they are on the number of wolves we have out there on the landscape.
Right. All right, Marshall, what do you, before we let you go, what you doing this weekend? Got to let the whole world know.
Oh, God. You know what? I've been so busy this weekend, I haven't, or this week, I haven't even thought of it. But I know Saturday is supposed to be our first sunny day in, like, it seems like a month.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely going to be spending some time out in the woods. I know that.
How are the colors?
The colors are really, really just about peak, I would say, for certainly for the maple.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the underbrush. The aspen are probably another week away, but it's a great time to be out, I know that. If people want to come up and you know, drive around, look at color, this is a good weekend to do it.
And has it been good color this year?
You know, it's been pretty good, I would say. You know, I know the DNR was thinking it was going to be really a good year, and but I think, you know, we've had this kind of a strange last couple of weeks with the weather, you know, being very cloudy and not getting cold at night, and that's not as conducive to, you know, that color change.
Sure.
As, you know, you'd like. I mean, normally that those cool nights and sunny days, that's what really helps to spark that change in color, and we just really haven't had that. But I think it's still, you know, I think it's still going to come on here if we start getting a few more sunny days.
And, man, when you're out in the woods, does it smell good, huh?
Oh. Yeah, sure does.
All right, Marshall, have a good weekend. Thanks a lot.
All right, you too. Take care.
Yep,
thanks.
That's Marshall Helmberger. He's the editor of the Timber Jay, covering news up in northeastern Minnesota.